Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hello, everybody. Happy Party Friday to everyone. Julie Bonniewell here. Chuck Bonniewell on his way. Basically, Rev had a golf match kind of training kind of thing, and they're winging their way back from the downtown Denver area. And Rev called me to say traffic is appalling. So Chuck will be here as soon as the Denver traffic lets him get here. Truth Straight Up, the show brought to you as always by happytrees.co and also Denver Cenogenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. We're hoping to get any second now author Scott S. Powell. We've had him on before. He wrote Rediscovering America. He's a fellow with the Discovery Institute and had a really interesting column up on Newsmax where he was talking about this ESG. I always get it wrong. It's the Environmental, Social, and Governance score that it's a kind of thing, you know, you sound like you're a conspiracy nut when you talk about it, but it's from the World Economic Forum. Klaus Schwab and all those guys have come up with a way to basically rate us. And now I submit that it's all just social engineer us, right? They're going to be rating us based on environmental, social, and governance. And what the heck is governance, by the way? I suspect that not agreeing with Joe Biden or disagreeing with having to take a vaccine, that might fall into the governance thing. But what they're having are corporations. And I think it was saying almost all of the four of the top major investment companies in the United States and other companies that have a tremendous amount of power are increasingly using this. And you just know they're not using it in any kind of way to help us. So we have Scott with us right now. Scott, thank you so much for your time. Scott Powell, a fellow at the Discovery Institute, great book, Rediscovering America. And thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be with your audience.
Yes. Well, I want you to explain, because I know, you know, we talk about this stuff and we've been talking about some of it for years. And, you know, people say, oh, you're just a crazy conspiracy theorist. And like everything now, it turns out to be true. But you just had, I thought, one of the best columns I've ever read up on Newsmax, where you talked about this ESG, this corporate behavior credit score system, and how it's insidiously, I say, moving into our lives in ways we don't even realize. So why don't you just talk about that?
Well, I think we have to, you know, we have to frame this in a way so that people can understand it. Okay. You know, the socialists have had a hard time reordering society, but, you know, their faith has never died. If anything, you know, we find they're more vocal today than ever in wanting to fundamentally transform the way the economy works away from a market-based system, a price-based system, where trade is done by strictly economic principles of supply and demand, mm-hmm. to a socially directed one that favors certain industries and penalizes others. And so much of what we're seeing in the culture of the left is this stress on sustainability, on carbon reduction, carbon emission reduction, the transition from the so-called fossil fuels to the more preferred sustainable energy of wind and solar. And the reality is, though, that this agenda really, if it was really to come to pass, it would destroy our country. It would destroy our standard of living. I'm not saying that energy won't change over time.
Right.
It will, because that's just the nature of life. There's new discoveries, new technologies made all the time. But right now, gas and oil are some of the most attractive at low price sources of reliable energy. And that's why the world runs on oil and gas.
Right.
It really does. We can't just transition to wind and solar.
Well, you can't not overnight.
Destroyed,
well,
and, we destroyed and I would the expansion say, of nuclear power many years ago, and that was all done for political reasons.
Right.
Nuclear power, you know, has been a fairly low cost source of energy. Yes, there are risks involved in, you know, in nuclear power because you've got to dispose of the radioactive residual. You've got to decommission plants after 25 years and so forth. But all of that is calculated. It can be, you know, calculated right. in terms of its, you know, its economics, whether it's competitive or not, because there's really no fuel cost. Once you paid for the uranium and right. the reactor is running, it's just generating power continuously. With no need to refuel or resupply, well, but there are large costs in right. decommissioning a nuclear power plant. But that, put that aside. We are not, you know, right. As far as I know, there's no turning to nuclear power. The turn is to these unreliable, sustainable sources of energy of wind and power primarily. And these are costly and they're not reliable. So we get back to the basics. Of natural gas and you know diesel and gasoline,
right? Well, and I thought
the oil.
BS.
And we have right. a lot of oil in America. It's just you know where it's right. remarkable how much oil we have. We're really the new Saudi Arabia. We have more than 400 years of of petroleum below the surface of Alaska and continental U.S. and also offshore in northern Alaska. There's a very rich offshore deposits, but we have 400 years worth of oil to drive
our
economy.
And I throw the BS flag on the whole thing anyway, because I think they're just trying, as you talk about in your column, to destroy the economy to put a new one in place because, well, we're getting rid of using oil here in the United States. We don't have a problem calling Saudi Arabia up and fist bumping them and trying to get oil from them, right? We don't have a problem with China and coal plants. I mean, we don't, if we really actually cared about the environment, if that were really the motivating factor, they would be more concerned about that stuff. So I guess that's my question. I mean, to me, it has really nothing to do, I don't think, with the environment. It's just a reordering of society, and they couch it in these nice terms. So people, they try to make us feel guilty, and then they can, you know, give us a bad ESG score if we don't go along.
That's right. That's right. And really, the ESG scores, and that stands for environmental sustainable governance. That is a mechanism whereby investment dollars can be directed to high-scoring ESG-rated companies, and funds are driven away from the lower-scoring companies. Right. And what's also happened is that increasingly the way people invest money in the stock market and the ownership of companies has been driven by exchange-traded funds, portfolios of stocks, baskets of stocks that are in a closed-end mutual fund called an ETF. And they really are a very convenient way of investing your money and diversifying, because there's all a whole manner of different ETFs that you can use to really reduce risk in your investing and optimize returns. But the problem is that ETFs own, when they buy stocks for their ETF portfolio, like when BlackRock creates an ETF, right. and these are very large pools of money, the S&P ETFs are billions of dollars of assets are right. in that ETF, but they're voting all their proxy shares. They are voting the investor shares, because you don't really own the investment. BlackRock owns it, Vanguard owns it. And so they're casting votes for all their shareholders.
Right.
And BlackRock, of course, is a very, very liberal, it's a very liberal organization headed by a guy named Larry Fink. And
right.
Larry wants to see, he's all in on the World Economic Forum. He's a trustee of the World Economic Forum. That means he's, you know, money bags. He gives them money. You know, the World Economic Forum relies on the philanthropic donations of rich people, and Larry Fink is one of them.
How does, let me, and for our audience, and Scott, you can't see, but Chuck just came in. Chuck was delivering Rev to various places. Chuck, we're here with Scott Powell. Let me ask you this. How do you, to me, this just seems extremely dangerous, right? I mean, for instance, in our house.
Oh, it is.
Okay, explain
absolutely
why.
It is. It is, you know, when we lose control over our economy, you know, the loss of political power comes shortly thereafter, and we are increasingly losing control over our economy. It's not a top-down socialist model, a command plan from the top, at least not right now. But the socialist revolution is coming in through the back door, through Larry Fink and BlackRock, and you know, the driving of money through ETFs into preferred sectors of the economy,
right?
The sustainable, the environmentally preferable, and it really is broader than that too, because it's really a political agenda. So you'll find that they will broaden the criteria for an ESG score.
Well, you
can
talk
be broadened
about
because these are qualitative things. They're political qualitative things. They're not financial.
Aren't at least some, I read yesterday, at least some Republican states are saying that none of their funds can go with any ESG.
Yeah, that's true in Florida. That's Ron DeSantis who just stood up and basically said that he won't have any part of supporting the ESG. He won't allow ESG to play a role in the pension fund management of the state of Florida.
Right. One of the things that, and tell me if this is sort of an insidious step, we were having this conversation last night. We live in Colorado, and Xcel is the energy company here, and they've been running around installing smart meters on all of our houses. Right. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, well, if they have a smart meter that they can control, right? I mean, to me, it's just not a very large step at all for them to decide, you know, hey, you, Chuck and Julie, we don't like your politics. And by the way, we think you're using too much air conditioning. So we're just going to do our own brown. I mean, it's that kind of thing. I think that once they get people accepting this, that we've seen people, Mike Lindell, you know, can't get funding,
banking
and things like that. I mean, do you see, I mean, it's a kind of step.
No, really, we're in a new phase of the communist revolution in America. And I'll be very frank. This is a communist revolution.
Okay.
I really want your listeners to understand this. You know, it's amazing. I live in South Florida, and this is an area of the country where there's an enormous number of immigrants, a lot from Latin America, but we also have Russians and East Europeans here. We have people from Asia, like the Vietnamese. And, you know, I have friends in these communities, and so many of them say, what's wrong with you Americans? You don't see what's happening. This is a communist revolution that you're undergoing. It's so obvious. You know, the communists, the first thing they'll do is divide the people from their heritage, you know, take down the historic statues and monuments that we saw that 2 years ago. And of course, the history books have been very secular, progressively written for really several generations now. Mm-hmm. So it's really public schools have really dumbed down people's understanding of the history of America. So this process is, and now it's, you know, manipulation of language, you know, very Orwellian use of language. And, you know, what's to follow. So we've got to wake up the people and remind them that we still have the power. We still have a constitution. We still have a Bill of Rights, and we have to exercise that. We have to push back against this, you know, this communist revolution, really.
Well, I have to say this last primary season here in America on the Republican side has been encouraging.
Yes, it has. It really has. Let me describe what the game plan is of the communists.
Sure,
the first thing that they do in taking down a target country, and we are the target, is to demoralize the people. In other words, you sap them of their beliefs, you sap them of their confidence, you make them feel hopeless, and you can do that in many ways. Dividing people has been, you know, their strategy. And when you think about our country, we're divided every which way. We're divided young and old, gender division. We find that almost everything gets divided, you know, the vaxxed and the unvaxxed. We're very divided people. That's not a natural thing. That has been foisted on us.
Okay.
And once people are really demoralized, they don't have confidence. They're disconnected from their beliefs in family, in their country, in themselves for that matter. Then the next stage is a destabilization, and the destabilization phase the demoralization phase can go on for more than a generation. So we've really had, really since the 1960s, a progressive demoralization campaign against traditional values, against the family.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty well completed. Americans are pretty well demoralized now. So the next stage is the destabilization phase. And then the final phase before they really take power is a crisis. They'll use a crisis to finally execute them.
Like a pandemic.
Right.
So we're really in the destabilization phase. We're probably in an advanced stage of it, because it wasn't just the pandemic. It was also the 2020 election. You know, we are a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. We're the only country in the world that was founded where the legitimacy of the government comes from the people. And how do the people choose their government? They do it through the voting system. So you have to have electoral integrity. So when the 2020 election was stolen, which it was, we now have we no longer have a legitimate government. We are really not that much different than a banana republic now in the stage where we're at. We're in this destabilized place, and then the COVID, hoax was really rolled out.
Right.
The COVID hoax led to the vote fraud, didn't it? They couldn't go to the polls and vote, and therefore, are you going to do? Well, you've got to have increased mail-in ballots, and also you have to have lots of drop boxes for people so they can get their ballots in, right?
Well,
all of this was contrived, and it all came out of COVID.
And I want to go back to something you talked about at the beginning, so for people to understand, because they make it seem as if you're crazy when you talk about this, and it's all just coincidences that you're putting you're connecting the dots wrong. But go back to the World Economic Forum. I mean, is that the group and the Davos people, is that who is driving this? I mean, again, this is not an accident. This isn't just them taking advantage of things that come along. This is part, as you're saying, it's part of an actual plan.
Well, this is where, high level intelligence is really important. I'm not an intelligence officer. I do a lot of research, and I can say this, is that the World Economic Forum has been cozying up to communist China for more than 40 years. And Klaus Schwab has spoken very favorably of the Chinese economic system, the socialist economic system, the quasi-socialist system, because they have a semblance of a market-based system there. Of course, it's really still state-controlled, but the market does work. The Soviet Union system fell apart because it had no market mechanisms operating, and it collapsed. And the Chinese learned from that. They realized that to catch up to the industrialized world, they needed to adopt a market system, albeit under their control, under the control of the CCP. So China is a model because, the people at the top are still in control, but, the workers are producing the wealth, and the people at the top are getting the riches. And
that's a plan, huh? Well,
whether WEF is and the Chinese are working, hand in hand, I just don't know. But I can tell you that when the fall of America comes, if the fall of America would come, it would be the Chinese that would rule, because the Chinese have the guns. They've got the military power, and people at the World Economic Forum, they would be squashed like bugs. They really would they'd be eliminated.
And China is clever because, you know, like when President Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord, I mean, everybody had a freak out meltdown, right? Nancy Pelosi goes to Taiwan, and China then today announces they're pulling out of climate discussions, and no one cares. like China, number one, was ever going to pay any attention to the climate discussions, but it's like, oh, that's okay. Over a visit to Taiwan. And I guess my thing is too, that's probably part of the plan too, right? This gives China an excuse now to say, yeah, we were never going to participate in any of your stupid ESG stuff anyway.
I'm not sure it's intentional. It probably is. Let's drive Russia away from Western Europe and into the Chinese hands. And the extent the Western world with Russia had some strength without Russia joining China. I mean, it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. And we bankrupt the entire war. We're closing in on 100 million. By next year, I mean, 100 billion.
I think I would say it's a billion. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy. But there's so many cross sections to this picture. I mean, there really is a military industrial complex.
Oh, sure.
The deep state does like war because it drives our military industrial complex. All the defense contractors benefit from wars, and so they, you know, this is one reason wars take place. It's a contributing factor. But neither Russia nor the Ukraine are model countries in any way. Ukraine is as corrupt as Russia is.
Yes.
Well, and they're reaching out to China now too. Apparently Zelensky is. So, well, let me ask you this, Scott.
Well, he's desperate, but I think, you know, frankly, I think it's over for Zelensky. I think that, you know, we ought to be pressing him. You see, by giving them more military aid, we're just prolonging the death. They cannot defeat Russia. It's impossible.
Right.
And so if Russia really does have limited interests of the Crimea and the eastern Russian speaking states that were pro-Russian, Ukraine ought to recognize that their borders can change, and let's make peace.
Yeah. Well that doesn't join.
Zelensky's end was forecast by the op-ed editorial thing in Vogue magazine,
right?
He and his wife. I mean, that's when you knew that his last days were.
They're doing the thing. Well, let me ask you this, Guy, if we just have a few more minutes left. In terms of hope, I mean, what do we do? I go back to our XL Energy. Now we have a smart meter in our home, right? It's not like you can really say, oh, I'm not going to use XL Energy, right? It's not like I can call, you know, BlackRock and say, hey, I want you guys to quit investing my 401k in this. What can we, how do we, because I, again, just me, I refuse to concede, right? It's like, and surrender. So what are some of the things besides being informed, but that people can do?
Well, I think we all have to think in terms of driving our commerce to counterparties that share our values. So I know it's hard, you know, Amazon, you know, has all the goods at the best prices and they deliver right to your door. But we actually have to think about, stopping the flow of commerce to parties that are really trying to bring our country down or that are facilitating this agenda. I'm not saying that all corporate executives, you know, believe in socialism or believe in what the World Economic Forum stands for, but they have also shown that they're ready to sell the country out. Really, they're really they're willing to. You know, national sovereignty is not important for them. They like this idea of a global world,
right?
And of course, a global world is a world of tyranny. It really will be,
right. How much difference would Trump make, do you think?
Oh, he'll make a huge difference.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's, I mean, we already saw him in his first 4 years, he was, you know, he was remarkably successful in achieving a number of very important objectives in spite of being at war.
Right.
He was being attacked continuously from all sides, even from within his own party. But yet he was able to make us energy independent. He almost completed a wall on the southern border, you know, really protecting our sovereignty from invasion of, you know, unwanted elements, and not all, you know, we are a country of immigrants, and we want to celebrate that and want to continue immigration, but it's got to be controlled immigration.
And legal, right.
All countries are countries.
And legal, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's
so, yeah, so Trump was an extraordinarily effective president. Yes. We know that vote fraud took him out. But look what he's been doing in these intervening years. I mean, right. He's done more out of office. He's done as much out of office than he did in the sense that he's been a kingmaker. He
right.
is, yes. You know, he is really given his support behind America First type candidates in the Republican Party. He's remade the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so when we have an election here in November, it looks like, you know, if we can get through the October surprises
right.
and the false flag events that are likely to happen, and they will push for delaying the election or canceling it.
Or we're all going to get monkeypox now.
You know,
yeah.
Increasing mail-in ballots. We've got to stand firm as Americans and say, no, our election day is Tuesday. I forget what it is. What is it this year? November
3rd or 4th? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's usually the first 7 days. But
right.
anyway, whatever. That's our election day. That's our national election day. Some more states than before have opted for paper ballots only. That's all good.
Right.
We ought to go back to paper ballots. We ought to create a fraud-proof voting mechanism.
Yes.
And
yes.
If we had that, I mean, the whole political complexion of America changes.
I think so, too.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
It would be just amazing. And then we've got a House and a Senate that, you know, we may see the decertification of the 2020 presidential election. Three governors, strong governor, and we have one with Carrie Lake in Arizona. I mean,
yes,
she's
yeah.
a firebrand for, you know, for vote fraud, you know,
yes,
and completing the work. And that means prosecuting vote fraud and decertifying that election.
There. Oh, Scott, listen, we have to let you go. Thank you so much for your time. Your book, Rediscovering America, available everywhere and anywhere?
Yes, pretty much. Yep, yep.
All right.
And it's really, let me close with this. You know, soldiers carry Army field manuals when they go into combat. And every citizen in America today needs an historical and spiritual warfare manual to renew their understanding and keep their morale high. And that's what Rediscovering America really is. It's a, you know, it's that historical and spiritual warfare manual that will equip you to not only survive but even thrive. And it's really a source of hope in troubled times. It's a very positive book, and it's written for busy people. It's only 200 pages long.
Wow!
And,
all
and,
right.
You know, what I've heard from readers is it's not just a page turner; it's a chapter turner. So
all right.
Enjoy the book.
All right. Well,
well
thank
thanks
you
very much.
We appreciate your time. Great call.
Oh, it's been great to be with you both.
All right. You too, sir. Have a great weekend.
We'll do it again. Thank you.
All right. Yes, for sure. All right. There's Scott S. Powell. Again, he's a columnist. He's all over the place, but this is a great column on Newsmax.
Here's Leo says he is good. Let's have him back.
We will for sure have him back. Well, I mean, it is this kind of thing, you know, I mean, I remember years ago, and I don't know if she is listening today, but Sherry from Lakewood would call and talk about the World Economic Forum.
Yeah,
and that was before I became educated about it. We're talking years ago. And it'd be like, okay, Sherry. And all of a sudden, everything Sherry was calling and talking about has come true.
Yeah.
And you think, no, they wouldn't do that. But all of a sudden, you know, there's this social behavior credit score system. You know, it's only to benefit them, to screw us.
Yeah.
And they're moving toward this you know, you don't need to own anything. You just rent things. And, you know, it seems like it's so nice. Like, you know, I use Blue Apron sometimes, right? Where the little meal kit comes and it's all prepared. Well, it's not a very big step from there to like, you don't need grocery stores. We're just going to send you the meals that we've decided you should need. And by the way, it's all crickets and things like that, right? And vegan-y stuff. Or whatever, the clothes. They have the same thing, these clothes where you don't own it. You can just send in the box and you just rent it. And, you know, pretty soon we're all going to be dressing like the people in, you know, 1984 or something. Like the book, not the year. yeah, we've had a ton of great comments here. I'll read some of the comments, and I apologize to everybody. This is from Jacob. Question: in the event that there is proof that the election was stolen, how can no one complain that it was a stolen election when the judge a case comes in front of was a reelected judge through a false or stolen election? Good point there. Charlene, KBB just likes the praise of the Koch brothers. Is just like the praise of the Koch brothers unit parties. She's impressed by their power and their money and their praise for keeping conservatives down, ruled by ego rather than principle, in my opinion. Dr. Donna, 8th of November, since she's running, she knows this kind of information. And Sherry was right. The World Economic Forum and the Davos crowd control the United States right now. All the clothes are gray. All the food is bland. All the women are trans. What a future. But fight back. We can fight back. There are ways to fight back. And let's talk about the primary, speaking of fighting back.
Okay. Well, as Scott just mentioned, you know, Carrie Lake is going to be a tremendous candidate. I don't know why days and days later, it takes some account. Somebody pointed out all of France went to election and they knew the results by 8 o'clock. I mean,
the rest of the state knew.
Paper ballots.
Right, right.
So it's amazing stuff. But so it was a great Tuesday. It's getting better with Carrie Lake and others, and they're freaking out. I mean, Joe.
Morning Joe
and Mika just go, these are interruptions.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think a number of things that anymore, you know, I'm not sure. You see various polls in terms of what sort of the average person, and maybe I'd say the independent person out there, independent voter, thinks about January 6th. I think most people, what I've seen for the most part, it's just not that big a deal to them. So when they keep screaming election denier, I think not only number one is it not a very big deal to a lot of people, but I think people have gotten so used to the media just straight out lying to them.
Well, they have.
That they kind of figured the more
starting with a Russian hoax.
Right. The more the media is screaming about something, the more likely it is that you know, you should believe exactly what the media is telling you. And so I think, and then given the fact that hardly anyone watches them anymore anyway, so they can jump up and down all they want, and then people go and vote for Carrie Lake. And I think that's just, I mean, that in and of itself should give us all hope, I think.
Yeah, and if Colorado could get the Republicans similar to Carrie Lake, it'd be a whole different state. Instead, we've got KBB and saying we're not going to mention any election integrity. You know, independent voters don't care about that.
Maybe independent voters don't care, but everybody should care. You know, I'll talk just real briefly about this. I was at the Adams County Republican Party meeting last night, and they were talking about the recount in the Tina Peters case and in Adams County that went well, and you know, everything. But that one of the guys was talking about, he was an adjudicator in the last election, and that means that he was one of the guys, and there's always, I think it's bipartisan people, you know, a Democrat and a Republican, and when they spit out ballots because there's a problem with the signature or a problem with what does it mean, he was one of the guys that did it. And he was saying, I thought this is really interesting. I was unaware of this. There's so many things we could fix. He was saying that he was just randomly, in his shift. And he said, and now keep in mind, I was one of 12 people. He said there were 100 ballots where it wasn't a signature. It was just marked with an X, right? So it was just marked with an X. Now, if you're going to mark it with an X, there has to be a witness signature there too, right? But there is nothing anywhere that says anything about validating the witness signature.
Right.
So we said, there is nothing that prevents somebody from sitting in a, you know, ballot harvesting warehouse somewhere, filling out ballots, marking X, and then signing their own name as the witness. And apparently would there be anything illegal well, there would be a lot of legal battle, but I mean, but you couldn't, there's nothing that the talks, I guess you have to be a registered voter, but there's no verification of that. And he said, where are all these people marking X's? Who are all these people can't sign? And to me, it's immediately, I'm thinking, because the signature wouldn't match. So they just have to have an X, right?
Stephen wanted to know what KBB makes as the head of the Colorado GOP. $90,000 right now. If she gets reelected,
I could be the head of it.
She'll yank down the block. It's less than what Dick Wadman's name is, $180,000. Of course, she put a lot more money in. But it's an amazing process. And if they get anybody elected this fall, then they'll say, see, we did it. We knew if we gave a message out there that went to appeal to independence, we're all set. So it's really incredible how the state is run and who runs it.
Well, you know, I want to talk a little bit before we get back. It's a Party Friday check. Before we get back into being overly depressed about Colorado, and I think there's reason to not be, which I'll get there in a second.
No, you tell me that one. I'll be waiting for that one. I want to hear. Tell us right now. Well, there's not a reason to be depressed.
Well, the Adams County Republican Party meeting last night. Here's the thing, guys.
Julie got to find out how unpleasant those establishment people can be, and how very
nice to me.
They weren't nice to anybody. They're not nice to anybody.
But here's the thing that, and I'm trying to figure out how to explain this in a coherent way. There is hope, and there is power. But we have to take it, and we can't sit back and let other people do it for us. So in Colorado, the way it works, because Phil Anschutz is establishment, he's the main donor. So, you know, basically he's establishment, and he's going to stay, the party power people are going to stay establishment because that's where the money is. But that doesn't mean the grassroots people can't make inroads. Inroads were made last night in Adams County. They had a vote for the vice chair, and the grassroots candidate won. Now, they were not very happy about it, the other people, but the reason they won is because there were a bunch of us who went there and said, okay, I'll volunteer to be a PCP, a precinct committee person. And on top of that, then I will volunteer to be a district captain of the PCPs. Sort of like I get to be like,
and the worker.
Yeah. But yeah. A boss of myself, I think, is largely it. But in so doing, I then became eligible, me and others, okay, became eligible to vote for the vice chair and the leadership of the Adams County Republican Party. So what I'm saying is, and Neil Masai has been preaching this for years, it all starts out getting involved at your very basic precinct level. If you get involved there, then you can get involved in helping elect the leadership of your county party. And you can then, and there are, keep in mind, guys, there are more of us, a lot more of us than there are of them, which is why we won last night, right? And so all of a sudden now, we flipped the tables a little bit there in Adams County. Don't you think it's fair to say?
Well,
now
they're going to be... They flipped them, you know, because Joanne is a good grassroots person, but they attacked her endlessly. And they lost last night, which is great. What people don't quite realize is you have to have a strategy, and it's not just an impossible strategy of taking every PCP position there is. You've got to take the state party over, and that's getting elected to be on the state central committee, and that's composed of 535 people, so there are a lot of those, and electing a
grassroots party leader.
Chair. But you have to start out with somebody everybody knows is grassroots and they can gravitate to. You can't just run somebody like Casper, who a lot of people don't know. We've got to recruit a top-notch grassroots person to run for state chair. If you win the state chair, you win the party.
Right.
And Phil Anschutz will withdraw all his
and
money.
He'll go someplace else.
Yeah, and we'll go, okay, good, fine.
He doesn't care about Colorado.
We won't have a GOP office. We don't care.
But what I'm saying, though, is, so guys, just remember, it's doable, but there isn't anyone else to do it but us. And again, you can, and we'll get into it as it's closer, but how to get elected so you can become then a voting member of the Colorado Republican Party, who then helps vote for the leadership. The establishment is called the establishment in part because they are established, right? They've got that organization in place. They've got their ducks in a row.
But they don't really, because this last time KBB won over Scott Gessler, because people viewed her as more grassroots. Of course she was.
They don't have it as
Steve
much.
Steve House was viewed as being a grassroots person, and he betrayed all the people, they feel.
Right.
And so this time we got to get somebody who really is.
And there are plenty of good people out there, but I also
no, they're not very many that have statewide recognition.
Well, right, no, they're not. But I want to go back to again, and this is what we talked about the last show. Remember, we were talking about how Peg Cage and Jimmy Mack, and thank you to them again for being on the show, have a website, and it's mycoloradogop.org, and they got this nasty cease and desist letter that the Colorado Republican Party is spending our money on to tell them to get rid of their website. They can't have the website because it says Colorado GOP. No one can say Colorado GOP without the party's express permission, which is, of course, a bunch of nonsense. But you ask yourself, why are they doing this? And that's because one of the things that Peg and her group are trying to do is to kind of get grassroots people organized and in positions where they can start voting, to start that sort of ladder to vote for the Republican Party leadership. And the establishment, I mean, is freaking out about that. So otherwise they wouldn't be spending so much time and effort trying to make us stop. And again, and Jacob, thank you for saying keep the hope alive. There are way more of us than there are of them. We just have to, and I know you're like, look, I'm busy, Julie. I've got stuff to do. I know that too, right? And thank goodness for Ben Nicholas, who like made me go up there and be nominated. Mm-hmm. Well, not nominated, just recommended. But the good news is, guys, you don't really have to run for anything. There are so many of these open positions, this precinct committee persons, this district captain, right? That you just kind of show up and put your name in the hat and they can appoint, they have to take you, right? I don't think, let's just say, could the party chair could not say, no, we won't take that Julie Bonnywell, can she? If they have empty seats.
No.
See, so that's a thing. We can go ahead. They're counting.
But you do other things. She all of a sudden dissolves all 117 offices. So all of a sudden everybody's gone.
Well, right. That starts to get a whole thing. I guess what I'm saying though is there is hope for the Colorado Republican Party, but it's not going to be quick and it's not going to be easy.
It could be
relatively quick.
You
yeah.
get it in Wyoming. Wyoming, as you've seen up there, it has the Cheneys and has Alan Simpson and all these establishment ones, but the party chair became a grassroots person and that changed everything.
Right.
I mean, and then all of a sudden a lot of the legislative seats started going to grassroots people. No, you get a hold of the state chair and it's a whole different deal.
Well, and here, Charlene has a point too. We won the state chair a few years back and Ken Buck and company took it away. Yep. That was Susan Beckman. That's yep. right. And that was such an unpleasant experience that she says, thank you. I won't do that again. Right. But what I'm trying to say though is it is doable. And Chuck, I think you're absolutely right. Colorado will remain establishment as long as Phil Anschutz is playing in Colorado because he's the main guy with the money. George Anthonisopoulos found that out the hard way. But
well, it controls all the independent Institute is really him. Colorado Politics is him. Denver Gazette is him.
But they aren't voting members of the Colorado Republican Party. So if we become the voting members, again, it is like Scott Powell said, it still is a government where people elect the officials, right? And now you can imagine the establishment GOP is doing everything they can to try to change that system. So I think we don't have, I mean, that's why they want to get rid of the assembly. But for right now, though, we can take control of it. We just have to. That's what I'm going to be working on. But because it's doable. And I think, as you said, you're absolutely right. Phil Anschutz has money all over the world, right? Mm-hmm. So if he realizes he's no longer in control of the Colorado Republican Party, mm-hmm. he'll just go play someplace else. He won't care. Colorado, in the overall scheme of things nationally, I think is not that big a player for somebody like Phil Anschutz. Right. And so then we can become an Arizona. And then we can become, like you said, look what happened in Wyoming as soon as they got a grassroots person in there.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's one position, which a state party chair can change everything. And that's what we have to get a hold of. Whether Barbara Kirkmeyer is the congresswoman from the eighth or not really doesn't matter much for us. She's going to be establishment.
Right.
She's better than the awful person running against her, but that's almost always true when you roll against it. But winning that state chair is everything.
That's what Jacob is saying. Did you see Daddy Cheney's commercial?
I did. It was so like, Darth Vader comes out. Trump is the worst human being ever. So he lied to his supporters. We don't lie to our supporters. I remember weapons of mass destruction. Yeah.
But Stephen is saying, well, Wyoming does not have the Denver Boulder access. Californians are not moving there by the tens of thousands. Yeah, but again, keep in mind, I mean, that's on one, that's on the macro voting level. I'm talking about grassroots people taking steps to take over, not to take over, but yeah, to take over. I'll say yeah, to take over, right. To take over the Colorado Republican Party. And that is doable, not easy. And it's not, you know, and it takes people actually, like I said, stepping up and becoming, doing the steps to become a voting member of a Republican Central Committee. And once you do that, you can vote. Now, they will do everything they can to go around it. But again, there are way more of us than there are of them. And on top of it all, we're right. I mean, look at what's going on in the country. People get that we're right. That's why they're so afraid of us. That's why you have the Morning Joe people melting down, yeah, that people are voting for Carrie Lake. That's why you have everybody scrambling to get Mike Pence in there, for God's sake, to save the world, to the World Economic Forum and the Davos people, right? Because people are waking up. And once that happens, you know, it's hard to put that back in the bottle.
I love the people who came into Arizona to support Robeson. It was Chris Christie. We love him. It was Pence. He's pathetic. And all the establishment has are just these worst people, and they can campaign with you all you want. Nobody's going to show up.
Right. Well, and this from Karen Cataline was saying earlier in one of the comments there. And feel free, everybody on Zoom, feel free if you want to pop in and you know, just raise your hand or unmute yourself and turn your camera on too. She was saying that there's somebody, Slugworth, whispering in the ear of the Colorado Party chair. Well, exactly. And then Karen or Charlene says, yes, Karen, the powers are not going to give up Colorado easily. It's globally important. Yeah, they're not going to give it up easily, but it's doable, right? I mean, we just have to participate. I mean, not just, because I realize that's a little word and it's a big action, but we have to participate. And we have to participate. Again, that's, I think, one of the reasons they're targeting PEG is because she has a plan there that she's implement. Right. And they're like, which would be to get the grassroots people into positions where they can vote for the party leadership. You vote for the party leadership first at your little caucus level, right? Then you vote for it, you know, on your county level, then you can vote for it on bigger and bigger levels. But we need people to run, and we need people. And again, there's so many positions open. It's not like you have to actually run. If you just put your name in the hat, they have to take it, at least for right now. Right.
Well, it depends on the county, brother.
Well, most counties are not overflowing with people saying, I want to be a PCP. Right. I mean, if you guys went to your caucus meeting, you were maybe one of five people there. I mean, you could have easily done all of it. And so we do have people like Chuck and Joe and Ben Nicholas and Peg and Dr. Donna, all of these people out there who are working on this one person at a time. And it's doable, I think. I mean, I got on it, for Pete's sakes. So we're going to take it over. Somebody's there.
Congratulations, Julie.
Oh, thank you. Hey, Peg. So how's it going? Did the Republican Party call you back to explain why you can't say Colorado GOP?
Not yet. They will call back when they're ready to serve papers, if they are. But for right now, they're on hold. They're on notice. So we're waiting. We're waiting.
Right. So what do you want to say about all of this?
Oh, thank you. I thank you for going to your meeting and becoming a PCP, becoming a district captain. Way to go. This is great. This is the good stuff.
Have you noticed that Julie looks a little bit like Carrie Lake?
I have to put my bangs up.
She's related. I'm sure she's related. Yes.
Yeah, yes. But Peg, aren't I right, though? It is doable. There are more of us than there are of them. And you have to go first to your local thing, and you vote for your county chair and your county vice chair. And then you just move up the ladder, so to speak, right?
Right. And, you know, Julie, we've got people all over the state. I've been trying to help get the papers served for Tina Peters. And I just think of all the places that we went when we were trying to get the party to opt out of the open primaries, which is such a terrible thing. And we've got friends all over the state who are doing the very same thing that you're saying. And now with Steve Stern and Dan Schultz, getting recognition from President Trump and saying, this is what we've got to do, just exactly what you laid out. They're doing it nationwide. And you know what? As we get involved in this, we realize Colorado is not unique. What they're doing in Colorado is exactly what they're doing in every state. They've got these hybrid meetings and the clickers and the machines and the mail ballots. They're doing all of that. And the establishment is not just the people who were elected. It's the people behind there pulling the strings.
Right. Well, and they have to do it that way, Peg, because they know they don't have the votes. And right now, at least, they haven't taken our ability to vote away in Colorado. So they haven't yet. I got to vote last night, right? Now, maybe they'll pass some new bylaws and they'll bend on top of that. But again, it's like there are, when people say, well, it's hopeless, we can't do anything. It's, well, you can, because I think, Chuck, what you said is so important. If Colorado gets grassroots people more and more into leadership positions, state chair, Phil Anschutz will go away, right? He'll go play someplace else. And then that evens the playing field again.
But they won't quit playing. I mean, they'll do exactly what we're doing, and they'll fill up those seats again. You know, I talked to somebody this morning in another county, and they said that the caucuses are the problem, because people can organize the people in the caucus so easily because they're ignored.
It's like, God forbid that we get organized. I mean, they're like, we got to get rid of those caucuses because those pesky grassroots people are using them to organize, for God's sake. We can't have that.
I know. So you can't win for losing, you know.
Yes, that's right. We can win, Peg. We can win. The fact that they're targeting you and my Colorado GOP says a lot, perhaps, about how much we are winning or beginning to win.
Thank you, Peg.
Good to see you.
So, thank you. Yeah, thank you for the work that you do. So we're just that is for the people. Oh, Leo saying Colorado GOP. you guys, that's going to do it for us in this Party Friday. Thank you to everybody on Zoom. We love having you there, and we try to read as many of the comments on chat as we can. Thank you to everybody who listens to us on Rumble and subscribes to us on that and Podbean.
Yeah, thanks to Scott, who came on and just great. He was just great. Welcome back.
And as always, thank you to the great guys at BBS. They keep this whole thing rolling. Have a great weekend, everybody. Who knows what'll happen between now and Monday.
What exciting things.
That's right. We'll see you on Monday.
Bye-bye.